The Vintage Gamer, Episode 5, Pitt and Gavitt Stock Exchange. Hello, and welcome to The Vintage Gamer, the podcast that seeks out great games from an earlier era. I'm your host, Jim Van Verth. And this week we will be covering two games. Some would say it's really one game, but I'd say it's clearly two games. There is Pitt, which is the game from Parker Brothers, the game of crazy trading. And the other is the original game that Pitt was based on called Gavitt Stock Exchange. But before I get to that, I have a few things I want to talk about. One thing I didn't mention last week is that there are some corrections to the Cosmic Encounter rules that I presented during that podcast. Those are listed in my show notes on the website and also in some people's comments. So I recommend that people look those up. The most important rule correction to note is that I said that you could either put no tokens in the cone or a lot of tokens onto the hyperspace cone. The fact is neither are exactly true. You can put 1 to 4 tokens on the cone. So in our case, we had a player who didn't put any tokens on the cone and she lost the game because she didn't move into that planet. And we had to later inform her that, yeah, you should have won the game. Okay, as far as last week, I have continued playing Dark Castle with my daughter, and I have to say that there is one flaw in the game, and that is the trouble level. And this is in the original game. Of the first two choices you have, door number one or door number two, you don't know what level you're going to get. And one of them leads to cool stuff, and the other one just leads to a dungeon where you have to work your way all the way down, get the key, and then work your way all the way back out. And that really isn't a lot of fun there. Beyond Dark Castle is tougher, but overall, it's better in that respect. All levels lead to something good, and there is still a dungeon if you screw up. For example, if you fall down into a pit, you do still end up in the dungeon, but I think that's a fair trade-off to dying. I mean, yeah, you get a chance to get out, and you get to work your way up through a level, get some rocks and some elixir. But it's not as bad as, okay, I've chosen a door, all right, I have to get through this. Oh well. And also, if people are looking to increase the difficulty of Dark Castle, I highly recommend playing with a wiggly 3-year-old on your lap. I also want to give a big hello to people who have discovered this podcast through Geek Fu Action Grip, Board Game Babylon, and All Games Considered. And also a big thank you to those three podcasts, especially the first one. I'm Er. And so with that, the trading bell has rung, so let's get to the game. So I'm going to be talking about two games today. One is Pitt, as I mentioned. In researching this podcast, I discovered that Pitt was not actually an original game, despite some of the stuff that I was reading in an official history of Parker Brothers. Pitt is actually based on another game called Gavitt Stock Exchange, which was designed and self-published by a man named Harry E. Gavitt. You can actually buy Gavitt Stock Exchange these days from Out of the Box. They created a reprint, which I believe was released in 2003 to coincide with the 100th anniversary of its original printing. And so I'm going to start the podcast by describing that game and then describing how Pitt differs from GSE, as I'm going to abbreviate it. Gavitt Stock Exchange was originally published in 1903, and it is a card game for 2 to 6 players. In GSE, the deck consists of 6 sets of stock cards. There are 8 cards per set, and each set represents railroad stocks. So, for example, one set of 8 cards might have the New York Central Railroad on it, whereas another might have Santa Fe on it. Each stock has a price associated with it, ranging from $125 to $250. And your goal is to accumulate the most money by collecting sets of stock cards, which you do by trading with other players. To begin the game, you take one set of stock cards for each player and combine them into one deck. Shuffle that deck and then deal out 8 cards to each player. The players are not allowed to look at their hands until a dealer gives a signal, and then trading can begin. Now, you may trade 1 or 2 cards at a time. The trading is simultaneous. It's not like Bonanza, where you say, I've got this to trade, do you have this, and you trade back and forth. No. What happens is a player at any time during the round, say, for example, one, I've got 1 card to trade. Who wants to trade a card with me? And then another player will say, okay, I'll trade you 1 card. and then you exchange the two cards without looking at them, so you don't know what you're going to get from another player, necessarily. As you'd expect, things get kind of chaotic with all of this simultaneous trading going on. And you might be saying, you know, I'll trade 1-1, no one's going to be offering you anything. Okay, I'll up to 2. Anybody got 2? Anybody want to trade 2 for me? And then you get a bid around that. In the meantime, two other people are trading next to you, and it's all happening at once. And then, once one player has 8 matching cards, they shout out, Topeka! And the round ends. I'm assuming they shout out Topeka because that's where Harry Gavitt was from. Now, a round is scored as follows. The player who matched all 8 cards receives points equal to twice the value of the stock collected. So, for example, if you collected stock that had $125 on it, you would receive 250 points. For the other players, if you hold the majority of a given stock, then you get only that value. So in that case, you would get just the 125 points. Minority holders get nothing. And the first player who gets 2,500 points wins the game. Now, that was in the original version of the game. In the out-of-the-box version, this has been reduced to 1,000 points. So those are the basic rules for Gavitt's Stock Exchange. Pit, the one that followed after that, was a game originally published by Parker Brothers, and in its original edition was for 2-7 players, and has been expanded to 2-8 players. It is now currently published by Winning Moves. So here's where the history gets a little fuzzy for me. There is a book that comes with the reprint of GSE, but I don't actually own GSE, so I can't refer to that. So I'm just going to say what I know in print, and you can draw your own conclusions from that. In the book The Game Makers, it states that psychic Edgar Cayce approached Parker with Pitt. Now, I'm going to describe Pitt in a minute, and you'll see that Pitt is basically Gavitt's Stock Exchange with some minor changes. In any case, whether Parker recognized this or not, and honestly, I have to assume that they did recognize it if the game was such a big success, they rushed this modified version of GSE called Pitt into production in late 1903. So let me describe Pitt, and you can see where the similarities and the differences lie. The railroad stocks had been replaced with grain commodities, like wheat, barley, oats, etc. And now there are 9 cards per commodity instead of 8. In newer editions, these commodities have been updated to include other items like oranges, coffee, sugar, and soybeans. In addition, the number of commodities was increased from 6 to 7. And in modern editions, this has also been upped a little further to 8. And this allows more players to participate. Unlike GSE, where players are not allowed to look at their hand before they start trading, in Pitt, players are allowed to look at their hands for a brief moment before trading begins. And now, you can trade up to 4 cards. So you can trade, instead of trading 1 or 2 cards, you can trade 1 to 4 cards. Otherwise, gameplay is pretty much the same. You trade cards simultaneously until one player has a complete set. However, instead of calling out Topeka, you call corner to indicate you have cornered the market. Now, later versions added a bell, which indicates the opening and closing of the market, so the finishing player can ring the bell. And I actually highly recommend using the bell, because what can happen is two players will simultaneously get the set. And so the bell gives a tiebreaker. First player to get to the bell and ring it wins the set. And the other big difference is the scoring. Now, first of all, the values of the cards range from 40 to 100, and the winning score is now 500. Also, remember that in GSE, the person who completes the set gets double the score, whereas people who get majorities just get the straight score. In Pitt, only the person who completes the set scores, and they just get the straight score. So if you were, for example, to get a complete set of flax, you would get 40 points. Now, everyone else gets nothing, and this makes for a more desperate game. You're trying to make that set and be the winner of that hand and get the points. So those are the basic games of GSE and Pitt, and as you can see, they're extremely similar. Now, to that basic game were added some optional modifier cards. In GSE, that card was called the telegram. And the telegram works like this. Okay, what happens is the dealer starts with the telegram in his or her hand. And the telegram is an invisible card. That is, you can pass it during a trade, but it doesn't count as the number of cards that you're trading. So, for example, if you were trading 1 card, then you could also include the telegram with that one card. It would still count as trading one card. And what the telegram does is modify scoring. It does this as follows. If you're the one who cornered the market and you have the telegram in your hand, then you lose $100. Otherwise, you win $100. So obviously in this case, if you're about to complete a set, your objective is to get rid of the telegram. On the other hand, if you're not about to complete a set, in fact, if you're in a situation where you're completely lost and the telegram ends up in your hand, obviously you want to hold on to it because that gives you a free 100 points. Now, Pit also has a modifier. In fact, it has two modifier cards. It has the bear and the bull. And according to this history that I was reading about the Parker brothers, this was the part that George Parker added to the game. So unlike the telegram, which, as I said, is sort of an invisible card, which gets thrown into the dealer's hand at the beginning, the bear and the bull are added to the deck and are treated as actual cards. So what this means is after dealing out all the cards, the two people to the left of the dealer, will have 10 cards in their hands. Now for those people, they can corner the market if they collect all 9 cards of the set, plus any other card which is not the bear, and they just discard that last card. So what do the bear and the bull do? First of all, the bear is always bad. If it's in your hand when somebody corners the market, you lose 20 points, plain and simple. And as well, if you do have 9 cards which match, and the bear, you still need to trade the bear in order to corner the market. So that does lead to a particularly desperate situation. You're right there, you've got the 9 cards, you just have to get rid of this one card and trade it away. And sometimes people just don't want to trade one card. However, to help you with this, the bear is wild on trades. So for example, earlier in the game, and you're not in this matching set situation, but earlier in the game you have 2 cards you don't want, and you have the bear and you just want to get rid of it. You can trade the bear and those 2 matching cards as if they were 3 matching cards. I could make the argument that Pit is the first take that game because of the bear. There's definitely this feeling of screw your neighbor as you pass the bear around. Now, the bull could be good or it could be bad. It's bad in the same situation that the bear is, if it's in your hand and somebody else corners the market. And again, it's worth minus 20 points in that situation. However, the bull is wild for cornering the market. So instead of needing 9 matching cards, you only need 8 if you have the bull in your hand. And that's called a bull corner. Now, if you happen to have 10 cards in your hand, and you get all 9 of the actual cards and the bull in your hand, that's called a double bull corner, and you get double the points, just like you would if you had cornered the market in GSE. Now, there was some confusion here when we were playing. In the original rules, it's not really clear if the bull is wild during trades. That is, it's not clear if you can trade, say, 2 rye and the bull as if it were 3 cards. We played as if you had to trade it singly, and it felt okay. Generally you want to keep the bull in your hand until late in a round anyway. So being forced into a situation where you're basically backed into a corner and like, okay, I gotta get rid of this card because there's no way I can corner the market, it added a certain tension to the game. However, I will say in the latest winning moves rules, the bull can be wild during trades like the bear. So that's basically GSE and Pit, with all their variations and modifications. Now, we've played Pit 2 to 3 times in order to prepare for this podcast. The first couple times, we played, I guess you could call it an abbreviated version. There was no scoring. We just played rounds of Pit, and whoever won that round, we basically treated each round as an isolated game. And that was actually kind of fun. It was made a nice warm-up game. We played that, and then we played Carcassonne, The Discovery. One odd thing that occurred while we were doing that is that the player to the left of the dealer won 6 times in a row. I can only conclude that it was just dumb luck that that happened, because I can't think of anything in the game that would give an advantage to the player to the left of the dealer. And then we played the game again, with the full scoring and the bull and the bear cards. And that was a rather different game. And the first time, it was tense. You were trying to win that particular hand, but you didn't have to worry while you were trading. You knew that pretty much every time you traded, you weren't going to get something that gave you negative points. Now with the full version, that changed completely. Because with the bull and the bear in there, you don't know if a trade with somebody is going to screw you or not. So that gave an entirely different feel to the game. The other thing that I noticed in the scoring is the game did have its ups and downs of fortune. It kind of felt like the commodities market. For example, I started out with a negative score. On the very first round, I might have gotten both. No, I think I just got the bear in my hand. And so I started off with minus 20 points, and that quickly grew to minus 60 points. Towards the end of the game, I managed to crawl out of that hole and get up to, I think, 150 points? Might be 120. But I had that sort of that dive of fortune, and I managed to crawl my way back out. Whereas another person playing, she ended up starting in the positive and then just getting stuck with both the bull and the bear cards. I think that happened to her twice. And she got down the negative points towards the end of the game. The other thing we noticed was that 500 points is a long night. And we eventually had to say, look, we're just going to stop when someone reaches 300 points. Because otherwise, it just would have gone on and on. I mean, with the negative points in there, if someone is close to winning, and all of a sudden they hit this run of where people are just sticking them with the bear at the last possible minute, then they're suddenly out of the running, and someone else is coming back up again. Now, this game really doesn't have the, you know, crush the leader of capabilities, because you don't know when the game's going to end, so even though you can try feeding the bear to the leader, they can trade it away. Let's see, what else can I say here? I would say it's very important not to forget that you have 10 cards in your hand when you have 10 cards in your hand. There were at least two times when I had actually cornered the market on something, but I had that extra card and didn't realize it. So that is actually a rather important thing to remember. So as far as strategies, ignoring the bear and the bull for the moment, if you're not playing for points, obviously all you want to do is keep the majority block in your hand and then trade away the rest until you get all 9 cards. If you are playing for points, then you might want to consider, okay, well, I've got 4 wheat, which are worth more than the 5 flax that I have. Maybe I'll try to go for wheat instead. On the other hand, maybe somebody else is trying to go for wheat, so you'd have a better chance of getting flax. So there's that sort of dynamic there. Now, considering the bear and the bull, if you get the bear in the hand, then it seems like you have a couple of strategies. I mean, one obvious one is to get rid of it as soon as possible. The problem there is that the player who gave you the bear will then know, okay, well, he just traded away and now it's there, and they can follow the bear around the table. So you might want to wait one hand. That strategy will probably change depending on how late into the round you're getting. Early in the round, you can probably hold on to it for maybe a trade or two, just to kind of confuse people as to where the bear actually is. And whereas later in the round, when it's more likely that someone's going to get a corner, obviously you want to get it out of your hand as fast as possible. Oh, one other difference I wanted to point out between the two games is that in the first game that we played, the first sets of games we played, we had 4 players. And so we had 4 commodities going around, which meant you had more chance of getting blocks in your hands. In the second game, we had 5 players. And it was surprising how much of a difference that made in how many clumps of commodities ended up in your initial hand. If you play with 7 or 8 players, most of the time you're going to end up with a pretty good mix in your hand. And those players that get a decent run would have a rather large advantage. But I can't say that for sure without actually playing it. Some other strategic advice I might give is to trade singles early. So if you have, say, 1 rye and you need to get rid of it, you trade that early because people are going to be trading singles. And as they trade, they're actually going to end up with more matches. So, you know, say you have a single in something and a single in something else. You trade away one of them, and all of a sudden you might have a pair that you didn't have before. And it actually becomes difficult to trade these singles later because people will have these blocks that they've created through trades. In the rules that we used in trading the bull, this actually made things a little difficult in that case. Yes, and speaking of the bull, the strategy there seems to be pretty straightforward. You want to keep the bull early because it does help you corner the market a little faster. However, as the game goes on and, you know, your trades aren't going the way you expected, you might want to trade away the bull in that situation. In addition to tracking the bull and the bear, you can also try and track cards around the table. I mean, yeah, it's a lot of stuff to keep in your head, but for example, if you trade flax with somebody and they give you flax back, I know I keep saying flax a lot, but I just love saying flax. I mean, how often does that come into conversation? So yeah, if you do a trade and it turns out to be flax for flax, and then that player turns around and says, all right, two, you know that they're just going to try to trade that flax that you just gave them again. Or the same thing might happen, even if you get something out of the trade. So suppose you trade flax and you get oats back. You watch them, they immediately take the two cards, hold them up, and say, 2-2. All right, you know that they're trying to trade Oates. You probably know you don't want to trade with them, and you want to go look at somebody else. So that's another strategy that comes into the game. Now, I've been talking about strategy for Pitt pretty much because that's what we played. Looking at the rules for Gavitz, I think it's pretty clear that Pitt makes for a more frantic game. I don't say chaotic, I'm saying frantic, because you're not sure what you're going to get. And on a given round, you're not entirely sure if you're going to get any points. In Gavitz, I mean, you can look at your hand and go, well, I have five of a certain stock. Okay, I know that I'm going to get points on this round. So I think that makes it probably a little less nerve-wracking and more of a thoughtful game. So, after all that, what do I think of Pitt? Well, as a party game, I think it's just great. Each round is fast and furious, and you can do just enough to fight off the specter of bad luck. It makes for a tense and frantic experience. And after the round, you can trash talk and gripe about how you passed the same cards back and forth. That happens a lot. There's only a couple of things that I would say against it. First of all, if you play with the scoring, it can drag on due to all the fluctuation. The other thing was something that one of the people who played pointed out to me, which is that it is possible for one player to prevent other players from winning. In order for the round to end, one player needs to get 9 cards. Well, if another player holds one of those cards in their hand, then the round can never end. So if one player has all the commodities in their hand, they can avoid trading with the other players and just let the game go on and on and on for spite. I don't think that's a major flaw, because if you're going to run into a player like that, you probably don't want to be playing games with that person anyway. Now, as I said, Pitt is a really good party game. However, if you're looking for a strategic game, this is not it. What cards you start out with affect your chances too much, and there really isn't enough time to build up a tight strategy during a round. The best you can do is try to improve your hand and hope for the best while you're trading. I do think it would be interesting to play Pitt with a modification based on the GSE scoring. Basically, you give half the points if you have a majority. It would be nice to get something for trading up and building blocks of cards. On the other hand, that might give a big advantage to the players that start out with the blocks of five, as can happen. But it's probably worth trying. So, which would I recommend purchasing? I mean, I've been talking about Pitt all this time, but there's also GSE out there as well. Well, not having played GSE, I can't make an informed opinion. But let me put it this way. If your budget is tight, you can just get Pitt. You can play a form of GSE by dropping one card in every commodity, as well as the bear, and just treating the bull as the telegram. However, if you do have the funds, Out of the Box did go to some trouble to publish an antique game. So if you'd like them to continue in that vein, you might want to go pick up a copy. At the very least, you'll get the card game, and you'll get the GSE history as well. Now, if your budget is really tight, and all you have is 3 or 4 players, you can actually create a version of either game just using a standard deck of cards. Just pick 2 through 10, or 2 through 9 for GSE, out of every suit, and use those as your commodities. Ace of Spades can act as the bull, and a Joker as the bear. You can go and get a bell from the office supply store, which, by the way, is also a really good idea if you go and buy the version from, say, Walmart, which doesn't normally come with the bell. And now that I've cost sales for 2 great companies, I think I'll close on that. One final note, if my recommendation for Pitt isn't good enough, Joe Studman actually mentioned this on the latest Dice Tower as his number 10 game for 6 players. So, if you don't trust me, trust Joe Studman. Next week I'm not entirely sure what I'm going to talk about. I may be talking about diplomacy and my sort of diplomatic history and one of the tools I wrote for diplomacy called Realpolitik. Or I might talk about a 2-player war game. I'm not entirely sure, but at this point it looks like I'm leaning towards diplomacy. So thanks for listening, and see you next week. The Vintage Gamer is a podcast available via RSS or direct download at www.thevintagegamer.net. Music for The Vintage Gamer is performed by the trio Music of the Spheres and available on the album of the same name at magnatune.com. I'm your host, Jim Van Verth. You can reach me via email at vintagejim@gmail.com or via Skype. My username is JV Square. Thanks for listening.